Vices Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Strength Depositions. I'm Chuck Zarowski, your host, and Jen and Mike are with me, but they're just with me in spirit. They wanted to be here today because today we have a very special guest. I'm a powerlifter. I've done powerlifting for many, many years, and when I started at Strength Depot, I got subjected to a lot of the strongman implementation. The majority of people at Strength Depot do strongman. And being a powerlifter, seeing all of it done, it's like Shane always says, it's strongman is powerlifting for athletes. So today we have one of the best strongmen in the world for many, many, many years. His name is Chad Coy. Chad's here, and Chad's here talking with us. We've played phone tag now for quite some time. I've wanted to have Chad on here for I don't know, probably a year. But today we're fortunate enough to get him on. So Chad, thanks for joining us.
No problem. I appreciate the offer.
Chad, you've been doing pro strongman since 1998. Is that correct?
Correct. I turned pro in the American Federation of Strength Athletes, the AFSA National Championship out in Las Vegas, Nevada, back in October of 98.
Okay. So, like, Chad has been doing that. Chad has won 3 Masters National Championships. He's a 2-time winner of America's Strongest Man in the Masters division. And that's one thing I want to talk about too, but, he also works for Parisi Speed School. A lot of my listeners know about Bill Parisi and the great things that he does with athletes over there. Chad's been like, what would you say like your title is at Parisi, or what is your title at Parisi?
Here in Columbia, Missouri, which is where I reside now, I'm the program director of the Parisi Speed School here in Columbia. And then as far as corporately, I'm a corporate educator for the Parisi Speed School. So I'm one of 5 master coaches within the franchise. So I travel around making sure everyone's certified and teaching the way we'd like it to have it taught.
Oh, that's pretty cool too. That's at least you get to be encompassed within something that you love doing. So my question is, Chad, is how did you start training? Like, how did you start? Like, you started off as a powerlifter and a football player, correct?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, to be honest with you, like probably most kids in the '80s, you know, I went to see Conan the Barbarian in 1980, and then I told my mom that's what I want to look like. So I went to the library, or actually I went to the bookstore and bought the Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding, and then okay. She bought a gym membership. So I started training once I turned 12 in 1980. I started training. Now, granted, the first 6 years was horrible because I read bodybuilding magazines and bodybuilding books and trained like a bodybuilder and ate like a prepubescent girl. So it was really rough because I was afraid I didn't want to get fat, so I was just trying to – I didn't eat a lot, so the gains were slower than they should have been.
But were you getting stronger, though? Did you find yourself getting stronger pretty quickly?
I got stronger. I mean, that was a gift from the very beginning. I got stronger. I could really push. You know, the thing is, I just didn't back it up with food. So, you know, when you're a senior in high school and you're 5'10", 175, you know, and I could squat 400 pounds, I could pull 400 pounds, I could bench 300 pounds, that's all great. Unfortunately, it really was just too skinny.
Right.
And I didn't have enough, you know, I'd laugh. I didn't have enough lead in my pencil. So, but I did fall in love with strength training. And then once I got to college, I started to learn more through just meeting other people, more readings, you know, my educations in exercise science and nutrition. And then I worked as a strength and conditioning coach for Purdue University. So I got to pick up a lot of knowledge along the way.
Okay, so when you went and you started to pick up your knowledge, and you were doing bodybuilding at the time, when you started to get into college, when did you realize, hey man, I got to start putting some food in me, I got to start learning how to eat better, and man, I really fucking love strength?
You know, once I got to college, and, you know, there really wasn't a lot of outlet, and being that reading magazine, Muscle and Fitness and Flex and Muscle Mag and Iron Man. It's like, you know, I was a bodybuilder and the gym I went to was about bodybuilders. So, you know, there's guys that, I mean, I always squatted heavy. I never deadlifted except for a stiff leg deadlift, you know, bench press, shoulder press. You know, didn't do like the big power movements, but I trained heavy. I did all compound, you know, but then, you know, I just, the more I read, it's like, I got to, just got to eat, man. You got to eat. So I started eating more and more and smaller meals and just trying to pack on the weight. And it was slow. You know, I wasn't over 200 pounds till I was like 21. You know, and it was just a slow process because I honestly, I did under eat. I just didn't eat enough.
Okay.
I didn't realize that, you know, you have to, you can go crush yourself in the gym, but, you know, I just would not follow it up with crushing in the kitchen, you know, and that's what, I think that's what a lot of people miss is that they don't eat enough. You know, they want to make all these gains, but they're not willing to pay the price. I mean, going to the gym's the easy part. The freaking nutrition is the bitch because you've got to do it. You know, that's 100. And if you're in the gym 8 hours a week, that's the other 160 hours a week of the job, not the 8 hours of training. That's easy. It's the food. Yeah.
I try talking to people about that all the time. Like, you always hear, like, you'll be at a bar, you'll be somewhere, and somebody will say, you know, how do I get big? And I'm like, you eat. And they're like, no, I eat. No, you don't understand. You have to eat. That's part of the job. Training's awesome. I love doing it. But if you really try and put on mass, you have to eat. And I think when I was younger, I think that's something that I neglected as well. Up until the time I was 30, I didn't eat enough. So,
yeah.
Boy, I fucking made up for it, though. Well,
you know what? I got introduced to John Perillo. And John's out of Cincinnati. He's a big time bodybuilder, and he was a huge proponent of like caprylic acid, which is a medium chain triglyceride, and putting it on your food and just eating massive quantities of food. So once I got introduced to him, and I met him through, once I worked at a health food store, you know, so I kind of learned about him through that, and then through a couple of the guys I trained with, and then I started eating. So then it wasn't a problem because I learned that, oh shit. To eat, so let's go cook up 5 pounds of chicken, let's cook up a couple pounds of rice, here's vegetables, you know, and then start eating, you know, and that really started to make a difference in my recovery, and I gained weight. You know, and the thing is like, I also gained fat because I was, you know, then I was, oh, you got to get big, so you got to eat. So, you know, I got fairly, I wouldn't say portly, but I was pretty heavy, and by the time I really got into powerlifting, I was actually out on the road. I worked for a nutrition distributor, so I had access to all the nutritional products I wanted. But I was eating food and met one of my accounts, Greg Gordon, his wife, Buffy Gordon, one of the premier female strength athletes in the country for years. Greg was a phenomenal powerlifter. He got me into powerlifting, so I kind of credit all this to him because without him, I would have just probably still been bodybuilding.
Okay. So when did the transition from... So when did the transition from bodybuilding to powerlifting take place? And did you, I mean, obviously, you know, you had trained a certain way. You mentioned John Perillo. He's the guy that I take credit for, or that I credit for helping me with my form in the very beginning when I first started. Because Perillo had Dennis Newman. Dennis Newman was a like his guy. And he talked about eating and that type of stuff. So that's actually when, I mean, John Perillo was instrumental in when I started to train and learning technique. But when you went to powerlifting, how did you feel as far as for, like, you know, you were used to bodybuilding and trying to put on muscle. Now, all of a sudden, that's not the gig. The goal is to actually get stronger. Did you excel at it very quickly?
Well, you know, at bodybuilding, I kind of trained, you know, I just kind of trained that really basic, heavy crap, man. I just kept trying to get stronger. I mean, a stronger muscle was always a bigger muscle in my mind. Mm-hmm. So transition really wasn't that hard. It just became, I did less accessory work. You know, I focused more on the bigger stuff. So you got to see me. I used to do arms all the time. Now I don't do arms. It's amazing. My arms are big and I don't train arms because you train the big compound movements. You know, once I got into powerlifting and Greg taught me how to deadlift and I kind of, you know, I really wasn't a good, I mean, I wouldn't say I was a bad deadlifter, but like I sumo deadlift when I started because I had stronger legs than back. But then I trained a lot of conventional and I fell in love with the trap bar and just a lot of variants. So, you know, as I progressed, I just tried to train heavy and hard and, you know, with the heavy movements. And if I did back off stuff, it was usually the same movement, just higher reps. So I could still build in some hypertrophy.
Okay. So what, how did you get, like, how did you transition from, you know, powerlifting to strongman? Because strongman's pretty big now, and it's, you know, from the World's Strongest Man, that type of a thing. But back in, like, say, you know, I'm not sure exactly when you started. You turned pro in 98, but when did you start, like, working in strongman?
You know, I mean, it came, like, I was still playing football. So I walked on at Purdue, and then I stayed and coached at Purdue, and then I found a semi-pro team in Lafayette, and I played the next 7-8 years playing semi-pro football in the summer and the fall. But, you know, so I would do powerlifting in the winter. But, like, you know, in the after season, in the winter, in the spring, before season started. But it's like I always just, you know, I read stuff like Iron Mind and Hard Gainer. And, you know, I loved reading stuff by Ken Leister and doing Farmer's Walks and Bad Carries. And, you know, then Dinosaur Training by Brooks Cubitt came out, and I read that. And I just liked the odd shit because it was fun and different. Mm-hmm. And have to necessarily be, you know, I mean, statically. I mean, again, statically, I was very strong, but I was never going to be a top powerlifter, you know. I mean, I remember one time, it was like 1992, I'm at Gold's Gym in Maryville, Indiana, and Ed Cohn and Victor Richards were doing a seminar. So I got a picture between both of them, and I put a little caption, I put on my trainer, and one says, "You're small," that was Victor. The other said, "You're weak," and that was Eddie. And, you know, getting to work with those guys and train with those guys and talk to those guys, you know, it just became, you know, I went about it a different route. I mean, I had my own route. I chose to, you know, I competed in drug-free powerlifting and looked at, I wanted to make it without the use of drugs. Mm-hmm. Was my personal choice. And again, I don't have a stance on that. I can really give a shit less what people do with their personal life, with their drug use. I don't really care. It's a personal choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that I made a choice and I stuck to it and I'm happy with it. And I mean, you'd ask earlier what was one of the reasons of how can you have longevity? Well, if you burn the candle at both ends, it tends to burn faster. If you just burn it from one end, it takes a lot longer to burn. So
that's true. You always see, or you see a lot of athletes, they tend to get good really, really fast and then they fizzle out. And you see that in strongman, you see that in powerlifting. And I think you're right. I think the drugs do have a lot to do with that because, you know, the tendons can't get the tendons aren't like accommodating, or the tendons can't grow like the muscle grows. And then you see a lot of like muscles pulled from bone and that type of a stuff. But it's just, I think you're right about that. Yeah. So when you started strongman, like, tell me the feeling. Do you have a moment where you were like, oh man, this is amazing. This is exactly what I want to do.
You know, I had done a couple of powerlifting meets. I mean, I did a lot of powerlifting meets. I did every meet I could go to. You know, I'd gone to nationals and I'd won a couple of national championships through Natural Athlete Strength Association and the WNPF. You know, and see, I always did those organizations because their nationals were always earlier, like U.S. was ADFPA back then. The ADFPA was always in the summer, you know, and I was already starting football. So, you know, I love football. I mean, if I could play football today, I'd still be playing. But, you know, you start getting a little older, it's harder to recover from that shit. And playing inside linebacker, just I beat the hell out of my body.
Yeah.
Powerlifting I enjoyed. It was great. I loved the camaraderie. But then we started putting on – I talked to Randy Strawson at Iron Mind, and there was no contest. So we actually started putting on contests. We were some of the earliest contests in the country. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great because you had to be if you were athletic and strong, you could move, you were usually halfway decent at it. So I started training, and my old training partner's name was Doug Arn. Doug was 6'8 and 450 pounds. You know, so never beat Doug, but then, like, there came in 1998, there was this opportunity to go out to Vegas and compete for a spot at World's Strongest Man, which Doug's going to go. I was like, so he trained his ass off for it. I'm like, and I was his training partner. So I'm like, nah, fuck it. I'll just go anyways. So I went, and it was crazy. By the end of the day, I mean, I'm out there, like, there's Chief Iron Bear, and there's Gary Mitchell and Terry Brennan, guys who'd been on World's Strongest Man. And I'm like, holy shit, man, this is for real. And then when the smoke cleared, I made the finals. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And then, you know, I'd made that decision that I was not going to play any more football. I was going to try this. I'm like, okay. And, you know, I mean, every kid watched. I mean, growing up in the 80s, you watched all the World's Strongest Man and mm-hmm. seeing, like, Bill Kazmaier and all those guys. And it's like, you know, so it was just like, here I am, you had this dream, and you're like, holy shit, I'm actually there. So I just kind of retooled and said, I'm going to do whatever it takes, and I want to make World's Strongest Man, under 6 feet tall, under 300 pounds, and without the use of drugs. So that was the goal. That was the dream.
And you were an alternate in 2001, weren't you?
Yeah, I was an alternate in 2001.
Yeah.
So it just became one of those things that I kept training and gaining knowledge. And this is back in the day when people used to travel to go train with people. You know, so I did well in 98. I met Phil Pfister and Brian Neese, trained with those guys, got to be really good friends with Brian Neese. We started training together regularly. Then I met Brian Schoonfeld and got him involved. You know, I went to Finland in 2000. I got to train with, you know, Jouko Hola and Sven Carlson and competed the world's best there. And then I just kind of went on this rampage of I would do any and every contest I could find in order to learn more. So I met Magnus Vermagnesen in 98, got to be friends with Maggie, you know, been on numerous trips with him. He's helped me a lot with my training. And just watching a guy who's like a master of every event, you know, that was just a godsend deal. And then I got a good sponsor back in 2000 that allowed me to gave me a buttload of money and allow me to travel. So if there was a contest that was a pro level contest, I went to it, and I went to it with one purpose: to learn more, to become a better athlete, to learn more technique, because I felt it was more technique driven in the early days. It was very technique driven. So then I started building equipment, and Brian Neese building equipment, amassing equipment, putting on more contests, and it just kind of just kept growing.
Do you feel now that it's more technique? It still continues to refine your technique, or do you feel it's something else now?
I think it's full circle. I think now, I'm 6 foot tall, 260. You know, I've never been big. I mean, I've never been like huge. And it used to be like I was small in 2000, 2001. I mean, now it's like I really should cut to a 231 to actually be effective. You're not effective as an open anymore because there's just not that many. I mean, just the genetics have changed. You know, the size of the athlete has changed. We're getting better athletes in the game. I mean, look at the evolution. When Carl Gillingham was 6'3" and 300 pounds, I mean, he was big. And then you had Scooney, and then you had Johnny Perry, and now you've got, I mean, for Christ's sake, now you've got, look at, you got Hafjell Bjornsson, 6'10".
Yeah.
I mean, 6'10" trumps 6'10" in athletic trumps 6 foot in athletic. You know, and I'm not saying that you have to be massively huge. It's not like Martins is huge. I mean, he's 6'4". He's not like he's small. But, you know, these new breeds of athletes, they're just different athletes now. So I think it's kind of like mixed martial arts. Like when you first start seeing MMA, you know, the jiu-jitsu guys won in the beginning. It kind of came to strikers, and then it became now. It's like if you don't have the full gambit, you're not successful. And the same thing in strongman. You've got to be brutally powerful. You have to be athletic and fast and explosive and durable. That's what you're starting to see now. So I think the sport has continued to evolve. And like in the early days, there was only a few people that had equipment. So everyone went to, I mean, I can think of times that there were 40 guys at the gym training strongman. And like every weekend, it was like, who was coming in to train strongman? You know, I remember one time, and this is like 2004, I mean, Steve Curran, Dave Oslin, Jason Bergman, Jim Glassman, Brian Schoonfeld, all at my place training, you know, and that continued to happen a little bit, but now more and more people have more and more equipment, so it's more readily available. So I think the equipment specialists, like I would say I was an equipment specialist, a specialist on technique when I was top of the opens. Now I've just been able to maintain the technique. As I've aged, I've maintained the technique. I've maintained strength well. You know, so at 50, I'm the same as I was 20 years ago. I just recover a lot.
That's crazy. I mean, like I said, I told you this earlier, that the fact that you've had such longevity and you've competed in so many contests and you've placed at the top tier of all of them, And the fact that you continually do it and the longevity that you have is just astonishing. Like, have you had severe injuries? Like, have you been injured in the past? We all have. Anybody who's done this has been injured, but, I mean, anything severe or anything that you've had to overcome?
I've never had surgery.
Okay.
I've got a bilateral pars defect in my L5, so I've got to be really careful with that, and I know how to manage it. My discs are deteriorating. Like, I remember a set of x-rays 14 years ago, my L4, L5 was about 50% degenerated. I just had a new set done last week, so my L4 is about the same, but my L5 is about 80% degenerated. Okay. And I've been having more and more lower back issues. So I'm just learning to manage that. Father Time is undefeated, but I'm going to make him every fucking inch of my body. I can tell you, guarantee you that. Is there more competition in me? I'd like to think that. I mean, last year, I went to Ultimate Strongman Masters and didn't perform the way I wanted. And I got the invite to Masters World Strongest Man, but then I got injured, and it's just been literally since last October, it's like every month a new little niggle. It's like, oh, this is hurt, or that's strained, or this doesn't feel right. So it's like, as you age, you just have to start figuring out how to train around it, the days you feel good, push. The days you don't feel good, it's not the end of the world.
Okay. Do you feel like we were talking about, like, you used to travel and used to travel and train with all these people. Do you still do that? I mean, do you still travel to different places to learn from people?
Yeah. I still travel. It's the learning portion, probably the limited. Now, it would depend on who I was traveling to see. It's like a lot of my friends, I'd love to go take a trip out to Colorado and hang out with Brian, or take a trip up to Seattle and see Grant Higa, or up to Minneapolis and train with, the Gillinghams and the Oslins and guys like that. It's just gotten to the point where it's like, there's just so much stuff you can do. 20 years ago, when I was still in the thick of it, it was so important to me. It was like my burning sensation. God, if I don't make the World's Strongest Man, I'll be a complete fucking failure in my life. It was so important. And now it's just something that I still do, and I still enjoy it. And I enjoy, when people and I can coach and help people, I like helping people. I like coaching. For me, it's like, I'm not saying that I couldn't learn more, because I'm sure I'm not nearly that arrogant to think that I know everything. Matter of fact, I think I know maybe, if there's an iceberg and 10% above water and the other 9% under, I'm maybe at about 15% when it comes to training. It just becomes, there's only so many hours in the day, and where I used to be able to function off 6 hours of sleep and do that 7 days a week, now I can't. I hate to say it, as I age, I'm just not. I mean, I can still outwork. Well, let's just put it this way. I can outwork any. I've never been outworked in work or training. But I'm getting to the point where it's just not what it used to be. And
right.
I have to admit that I think a lot of that is age, and that I'm just not recovering. And I've definitely seen a shift in recovery the last couple of years.
What things have you done to kind of aid your recovery, Chad?
I think I drink Play Again like it's – I mean, if I had a Pez dispenser with ibuprofen, I'd have a grip of Play Again. I pound Play Again. I take care of my nutrition is on point. So, I'm taking anything joint related. I take tons of fish oil. I do plenty of pre, intra, and post workout nutrition. Really focusing on, using a good clean carbohydrate like cyclic dextrin, and then just using essential amino acids and branched chain amino acids, just because they're more readily available in the intra workout. From a recovery standpoint, if I train for 3 hours, it's literally like an hour and a half warm up and then an hour and a half workout. So I'm doing so much, I've got the vibration technology, the Sphere and Hyper Ice from the company Hyper Ice. So that really cuts my foam rolling down, but I end up doing so much more of it, so much more mobility. I'm doing a lot of traction on my lower back, trying to get blood into that, into that, sacrum, L5 area, you know, just doing a lot of prehab, lots of band. I mean, like if you watch my workout, the first hour and a half, like, motherfucker, this guy looks like it's like a physical therapy. But it's like I've got to do all that in order to be able to go train. I mean, gone are the days that you can drive to the gym, jump out of your car, and go in and start banging.
Oh, jeez, I miss that. Do you, feel? Go ahead.
I wish I knew more then than I knew now. Then I wouldn't. And it wasn't bad then. I did do warm-ups, but I wasn't as meticulous about it as I am now. I think hindsight and age, wisdom, all that comes together, and you kind of look back like, I'm going to do all the little things to take care of my body.
I think that too, but I also think like the internet and like Kelly Starrett and a lot of the mobility and stability things that you can find online, like PT stuff that back in the 80s and 90s, I mean, you don't have access to that. You had access to maybe people that might knew it, but you had to, you know, seek them out. Whereas now you can go on the internet and you can figure out, okay, well, you know, my acetabulum, I'm feeling like my hips impinged. What's going on? Do I have an acetabulum impingement? Let me check that out. Okay, these exercises I can do. So I think that has actually helped.
Right. I think it's helped as much as it's hurt, because I think there's a lot of false information and a lot of internet gurus. I think what drives me absolutely – this is a side note and probably a rant. Some shit drives me absolutely batshit crazy. You know, I qualified for USS Nationals or NAS Nationals. Now I'm a super coach. Hit me up. DM me. It's like, dude, you don't know shit. You don't have any business coaching someone fucking in person, let alone online. You know, and it's like, you know, but I went to Nationals.
Yeah.
I guess it's just, and again, maybe I'm just an old, stuffy old prick of a coach that thinks that the 3 decades in the trenches means a hell of a lot more than your new certification from ISSA and your degree.
I think you're right. I think, like, Dan John told me one time, he said, if you disagree with Stuart McGill, you're wrong. That's just how it goes. If you disagree with him on back stuff, you're wrong. And it's just, I think it's people need to seek out like credible sources, like, you know, yourself, Stuart McGill, you know, Dan John, people like that, you know, Dave Tate from Elite. I think like people like that, they have the knowledge and the working knowledge and whatnot. It's these, like you said, it's the people that go on the internet and they go on Instagram and they placed in Nationals or they competed in it or they did one powerlifting meet and all of a sudden, hey, come, like you said, DM me and then I'll hook you up for training advice and programming and stuff like that, knowing damn well they don't know how to program.
Right. So, sometimes, I mean, I've been doing this for 35 years. Sometimes I wonder if I know how to program. Like, there's different ways of skinning that cat. I mean, I do it in a certain way and it's worked for me and it's worked for my athletes, but there's other ways of doing it and there's no one that's right nor wrong. I think, like, the immortal words of Louis Simmons, like, everything works, but not forever, you know? Yeah. I did a lot of reading on Arthur Jones and Ellington Darden and Dr. Ken Leiser and the high intensity movement. And then, you know, Hard Gainer, where it was like Stuart McRobert was all about, you know, full body workouts, you know, what worked back in the 50s, the pre-steroid era, you know, and then, you know, I look at conjugate, the West Side system. I bought a lot of equipment from Louis. I got a lot of training from Louis, learned a lot of stuff. And it's like what I've done is just more or less, you know, combined everything together to make a system that's worked for me and the athletes that I've got. It's worked for them.
Is there a certain system that you use, like, as far as for – like, do you use the same methodology, or is it like, you know, do you, like, I know you said you take a little bit of conjugate, a little bit of high intensity, that type of a thing, but is it like a certain way that you've developed to like train certain athletes?
It's really evolved over the years. But I mean, I still train full body, you know, I put a lot of warm up in, I do a lot of rate of force reduction. So whether that's with my youth athletes or my adult athletes or myself with strongman training, you know, rate of force reduction would be for a strongman would be the Olympic lifts. So we would hit some Olympic lifts and some other low level reactive stuff, some jumping, some med ball work. You know, then we're going to do our big movement patterns. And, you know, I usually have like a day, if there's 3 days in the workout, I have a focus of a squat focus, a press focus, and a pull focus. You know, but it's not like I don't press, pull, and squat on those other days. you know, but if it's like a deadlift day, I might, my warm up might be, you know, six to eight doubles with a front squat, and then I'll go into deadlift because that I got a little leg work my anterior core, and then go into my posterior core. But then I might, you know, at that same point, I'm going to press. Say I've got a press, I might do a dynamic effort press because my next the workout after this is the max effort press. So I use a lot of the conjugate principles, dynamic effort, max effort, circumax repetitions, you know, and I just blend it in a way that gets the work done. Now, I used to do a lot more work than I do now. Now I've simplified it even more. It's like I just end up doing, here's the movement. So if I'm going to do, you know, if I'm doing X today, then I'm going to use that movement the whole time.
Okay. So you use a lot of like the principles that like Zat Sayorsky talks about and So a lot of that in the force production, which is a huge thing.
I think you got to beg, borrow, and steal. And I think the thing is like, you know, and then what works? Record it. I mean, my mom died 2 years ago, and like last year, it was about this time last, went to my mom's house and I had to clean it out. Well, I had all my training journals from 1980. I mean, this was literally like 400 freaking training journals. And it's like, you know, I'm moving. I didn't have a lot of space. Like, do I want to carry this shit with me? And I made the decision that day. It's like, you know, I'm just going to sever the past, pitch it out. But there was so much knowledge within the books of just like, try this workout. Did it work? What were the results? How did you feel? You know, I think that's the thing that people forget to do. I think it was Tommy Kono said, you know, the faintest of pen is better than the sharpest of mind. I mean, get a training journal, write down. I don't care if it's on a spreadsheet. I don't care if you're using Train Heroic and it's on there or whatever digital modem you use. I like paper just because I'm old. Yeah. So I write it down. And you know what? I write it all down. And if it works, then what works? But does it work forever? You know, I love to train heavy and then do back off work and get my reps. I mean, just looking at the fiber types, I mean, hit type 2Cs, type 2Bs, type 2As, maybe some slow twitch, all in one workout. But then I'm doing one movement. I don't need a lot of at that point, I don't need a bunch of extra stuff like a body motor to hit it from so many different angles. You know, I'm just going to fucking squat. I'm going to squat up to a 2RM, and I'm going to back off and do, you know, three sets of five at 90%, and then I'm going to hit some slower eccentrics at 70%, then I'm going to do a blast out set of, you know, 50% of my 2RM that day for a set of 20. Okay. I mean, shit, I smash that muscle group, it's done, move on. But that's the one, and I would do a squat, and then my variance, I look at, you know, everyone's into this, CrossFit's kind of brought variance to the table, and I'm not a huge fan of variance. I think for younger athletes, they don't need nearly the variance as an older athlete would. Mm-hmm. I mean, training for close to 40 years, I like variance. Why? Because you know what? I don't want to fucking squat every goddamn week for 12 in a row. I might back squat. I might front squat. I might overhead squat. I might pause squat. I might chain squat. I might wobble squat. But I'm going to squat. Now, the thing is, I'm going to squat 3 days a week. Just where I'm going to train heavy and hard once. Because I think there's a lot to, especially when you first get started, you need enough frequency to learn the motor pathways to develop a proper lifting technique. And I think that's where a lot of people get caught up. The people that are all about variance, I need more variance. No, you don't need more variance. Kids don't need variance. I mean, shit, all my kids, they squat.
Yeah.
You're squatting. Well, you know what? What have you learned? Where are you at in the continuum? I'm going to teach you the goblet squat first. I'm going to teach you the front squat. I'm going to teach you the back squat. You know what? And here's the thing. If you came here and you were this skinny 140-pound kid and you started with goblet squats and now 3 years later, now you're back squatting, you're a buck 90, I don't know, you put on muscle. You know, so just get – I mean, I think people forget. It's just not that goddamn hard to get strong. Put more weight on the bar consistently and you get stronger. And I think everyone wants these magical pills. They want this magic advanced. I mean, even with Parisi, I mean, as a master coach, I just did a cert. And we've got a basic cert and an advanced cert. And I teach both. And it's like, everyone, they want all the advanced material. It's like, you can't even master the basic material. Why the hell would I teach you the advanced? And I think that's the same thing with a lot of people. It's like, they want this magical rep schema, breakdown of everything, meticulous. It's like, dude, you need to just go do 5x5 for the next 6 months and get fucking stronger.
Yeah.
Because you're weak. You know, and I think people forget the simplicity of training. It's not that hard. Put more weight on the bar each and every week, and magic shit happens. Now, at my – where I'm at, it's like it's not. I mean, like right now, it's like for me, it's a constant battle to not get weaker. You know, I look at – as you age, I think you hit a strength peak and you can hold it. You know, and I would like to think that I can – I've got one more good season in me. I'd like to make it back to Masters Worlds this year if my body will hold up. You know, and perform at the level that I've performed at for 20 years. So will that happen? I don't know. I mean, maybe it's time that I go back to bodybuilding and just go do some pump sets and not do anything really super hard and watch my nutrition and get on some cardio and not be, you know, not carry 12% body fat. Who knows?
I think that's something that, like, I'm 45, so I've dealt with multiple injuries in the past, and I think that's something that, like, I think at my age I struggle with, because I want to compete in another powerlifting meet. And I had every intention of doing it, but I ended up getting hurt again. So it's like sometimes I think, do I just want to drop some weight and go into bodybuilding again and kind of relax and let my body rest? Or do I want to keep on doing what I'm doing? So I think at our age, I think it's something that, you know, we always have to think about. My question for you, Chad, is like when you got, like, let's say you're competing and you're in the heat of competition. Like, everybody always talks about trying to get themselves in some sort of a zone. Like, you know, basketball players speak about it. Michael Jordan talked about it. Or to try and get, like, I don't know, like, to dig deep, to dig deep inside of you. Is there anything that you've done or anything you use? Like, when you just know that you have to do 20 more seconds of this event, there's 20 more seconds, you just don't feel like you can go anymore. Is there anything that you do or anything in your mind that you use to just keep going?
You know, just the, I don't know. I mean, almost four decades worth of just pushing your body. And I think when it's time, you just know, you just got to go. It's funny because, like, I started training with a bunch of younger guys, and like they start trying to get all jacked up. Come on, dude, let's go. It's like, I don't have to flip that switch. You know, if it's time to compete, then yeah, I know when to flip that switch. It's training, I just don't. If it's time to compete, it's like, you know what you got to do. You got to go out and do your best. And anything less than your best, and you're wasting the gift that you have, I think. That's Steve Prefontaine, so I didn't make that up. I pulled that out of hip, you know. And I think it's just one that, I don't know, sometimes in the past I've had morbid thoughts, like, you know, like I'm holding this, doing a Hercules hold and holding the car, and if you don't hold it for 25 seconds, your kid's head's underneath it, so you better fucking hold it. And that kind of gives you a little extra motivation.
Yeah, that'll do it.
But like anymore, it's just, I don't know, just let's just go do it. It's time to go. It's time to compete. I mean, it's such old hat that, you know, when you've competed between powerlifting and strongman, if you throw in football, I've competed, I mean, hell, that's like over 500 battles you've been into. It's kind of old. It's like not a deal. So I don't really try to get amped up. I mean, there's sometimes, a lot of times I talk to myself. The conversation, like when people look, oh my God, dude, he's talking to himself. Like I'm just going through my mind what I need to get done. You know, I can visualize in my head what needs to get done. You know, I just don't flip that.
Okay.
I think as you get older, you don't have that freaky flip switch anymore. You know, you do, but you don't really bring it out that often.
Okay. That's fair enough.
And,
like, when you're talking, like, all these strongman events, Chad, like, you have, you know, there's maximal strength. There's all these different types of strength. But in strongman, like, do you find that, like, maximal strength and strength endurance are equally important?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You've got to have both. You can't have one without the other. I mean, anymore, it used to be, I mean, maybe 20 years ago, you could get away with not having as much maximal strength. I mean, Al Schoenfeld, the first time he won America's Strongest Man, the fucker couldn't pull 600 pounds.
Really?
No, he couldn't pull 600 pounds to save his ass. But, you know, he won his first America's Strongest Man. He went to Worlds. You know, there was a lot of guys back then that were, you know, not nearly as strong as guys are now, you know. But I think nowadays, even in the masters division, you have to have enough strength, and you have to have enough strength endurance. And I think conditioning to a point, I mean, that's the one thing I've always had is I've always been able to out-condition someone because I can outwork them. And that becomes work capacity. So I think a blend of maximal strength, endurance, and then work capacity.
So what do you use to try and, like, if you're going to give advice on somebody that's starting strongman and you're going to talk to them about GPP or trying to get their work capacity up, do you talk about, like, sleds and farmer walks and that type of thing, or what sandbags? What do you use for your conditioning to build up your work capacity when you need to, or if you needed to?
You know, I do work capacity. Like, I'm a non-traditional. I kind of try to think outside the box. So okay. If you look at, I cluster movements together. So if I've got three movements to cluster together, so let's say I'm going to squat, I'm going to press, I'm going to pull. I'm going to do like a squat, a vertical press, and a vertical pull. Well, I do set A, set B, set C. So my heart rate stays elevated the whole time. But by the time I come back around to the squat, I've had 3 to 4 minutes of recovery. So, you know, localized recovery in my legs, I'm recovered. But it wasn't like I was just standing still watching the weight sit there, you know, which that old school powerlifting or heavy strength training, do a set, wait 3 to 5 minutes, do the next set. I think that has its place, but I like to keep moving, whether it's for my training or my athletes, because you only have so much time in the day. And that really develops training kids. You know, when I get these kids and I can only strength train 2 times a week, how the hell am I supposed to do that without, you know, that thinking outside the traditional box? So that's how I really developed it, and it really kind of played into my strongman. And, you know, it's kind of in that template that I've used for close to 30 years now.
Do you that in, like, your in-season and off-season training? Like, when you're peaking for a competition, do you still maintain that?
Oh, yeah. And I'm just doing all – and then I do all kinds of filler work, too. So I might do face pulls, band pull-aparts, band dislocations. You know, I'll fill in, you know – a lot of times I'll throw in an agility – not that I think agility ladders mean anything, because they don't. I just like them because they keep my heart rate up.
Right.
Reactive. So I might throw in some low-level box jumps, some reactive training, some ladders, you know, just stuff that's still athletic movement, but keeping my heart rate up so I can stay – you know, if I can keep my heart rate 130 to 150 for 2.5-3 hours, you know, I'm going to have a good GPP. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm saying I don't condition, because then I have to condition to go, like, what's the max I need to go? I need to go 90 seconds. Then I'll do 90-second repeatables and, you know, work my capacity up there to be able to handle more and more discomfort. And I think that's what people don't realize, is that, you know, when you train, you're getting that old adage of, you need to become comfortable being uncomfortable. That was Martin Rooney. I keep stealing everyone else's words, but, you know, just, you need to be able to be there. You need to be able to train in an uncomfortable state and be okay with it. You know, whether that's for strongman or for youth athletics. I mean, I love it when my kids, I tell them that you're never going to have a game that's as hard as a training session. You know, and I said, if you learn to train hard now, you'll learn and give it now. You'll have no problem giving it on the field when it really matters. You know, because it's 4th and 1, the game's on the line, there's 3 clicks left in the game, and you're sitting there looking at the guy next to you and goes, dude, you have not trained nearly as hard as I have. I'm about to stomp you into the ground, and we're going to win this game. You know, that mentality takes years to – I mean, it takes training. You know, and I think that's what I – when you ask, like, what do I flip the switch? Like, I don't have to flip the switch every day when I train. I flip the switch every day when I coach, because I need to instill in our athletes that this instinct of – like, when it's time to go, I don't need to rev myself up. I'm ready to go. It's kind of like, in the movie The Avengers, like when they ask Bruce Banner, you know, what's your secret? Because I'm always angry.
I'm always angry, yeah.
You know, it's like I'm always ready to go. Like, if it's time to go, it's time to go. And I think that's the thing. Now, is there times that I can get more heightened? I used to. I don't do that as much anymore. And I think that's more of a function of just, I don't know. It's like last year at Nationals, like, you know, it's time to go. Okay. You know, everyone's getting all pumped up. I'm like, I'm going to go do what I can do. It's 75 second time limit. Whatever's there is there. You know, if I win, I win. If I don't, I don't. I'm going to put my best effort forward.
I guess doing so many strongman and competing so many times and whatnot, like you said, definitely has its advantages in that. So well, you kind of know what you're expecting as well.
I think what you end up seeing is all these young guys, they have to tap into that. They have to get psyched up. And it's like, you know, that's the difference. It's like the, what was that movie? It was Cops, and it was back in the 80s. It was like Robert Duvall and Sean Penn, and they're standing at the top of the hill, and Sean Penn looks down at his, and they're telling the story. It's like old bull, young bull. The young bull looks down at the field, and he goes, man, there's a whole field of cows down there. He goes, I'm going to run down and have sex with one of them. And the old bull looks at me and goes, well, that's kind of stupid. I'm going to walk down. I'm going to have sex with all of them.
Yeah.
The difference between the young guy and the old guy. It's like, you know, the young guy conversations about, you know, have their training and their drugs and this, that, and the other. The old guys are like, you know, hey, man, how's your business doing? How are the kids doing? What's your wife up to? What's your girlfriend up to? You know, what's life like? You know, it's a different mindset. And I think that's the thing that comes with age, that you have this mindset that, you know what, when it's time to flip the switch, I know how to do it. I don't have to get amped up. And you know what, when the contest is over, I sure as the fuck don't want to go back to the bar and rehash the last 6 hours and six events. I want to go, let's go do something. Let's build relationships. And I think that's the thing that's lasted for me in this sport has been just the relationships that you build. That's what it's about, you know, and just, you know, that's really what it's about. It's about those long-term relationships. And I think that's what people forget is that, you know, some of my best friends are, well, actually all my best friends from this in the world are from the sport, you know? And you know, it's like, you know, when you got someone you can count on, you can call on. And I think that's the beauty of the sport that I think some of these younger guys, it came in generations because it was like there was a couple of generations of guys that were just jerks and then it came full circle and then it came back to jerks and then back to cool guys. And it's just like, you know, it's just, and then the internet really hasn't helped. It used to be the old diesel powered forum and now it's strongman, you know, or then there was Mirundi Muscle. And, you know, it's like you got some of these mouthy guys that just, and then social media, there's people put bullshit up all the time. It's like, I don't know. Sometimes I, you know, maybe we need to just take a step back and say, you know, your mom or your grandma probably told you, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. It's probably a good place to start.
You know, it's funny you mention that. Like a couple days ago, I saw a video of a girl who was squatting and she had like some hip pain. And so I made a couple of suggestions just on Instagram and mentioned like, okay, well, maybe you can unwind your hips and kind of point your toes out just a little bit. Maybe take some pressure off your hips and just subtle things, nothing crazy. You know, I wasn't getting into anything like crazy. And then somebody posted, well, you know what? You don't have any videos on your page of you squatting and her form is dead on. And I was like, look, dude, I'm just trying to help. You know, this is somebody from a hip tear. And, you know, actually, if you want to check out my squatting, here's where I am and whatnot. But the thing is like, it was solid advice and I wasn't trying to like be pushy, but everybody thinks that they know stuff and they take offense whenever like you give them advice. And it's not like, you know, you're not trying to be mean. You're not trying to like do like be hurtful at all at anything you say, but just taking advice or trying to think of another way, if they're, you know, structured in their thinking, it's hard to change a lot of people like that. That's why I don't even try anymore. That was it.
I think you just don't try. And if people solicit your advice, to give it to them. If they don't, just let them do stupid shit. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I've done that over the years. And 9 times out of 10, it bites you in the ass because they don't listen to you. You know?
And that's how I felt.
It just is what it is anymore. I just, I don't
know. Chad, I think we're getting old and I think we're just getting older. I think priorities change too. And like your priorities, like when, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to be the leanest, biggest, strongest guy I could be. But now that I get older, man, I just want to raise my kid and work out and have fun and maybe do a meet soon. But, you know, like, but my kid's my priority. So, and that's how.
I had kids early on and my kids have been throughout the whole process. And, you know, I watch a lot of these young guys when they start getting kids and they can't train anymore. It's like, God, pussy. Yeah. It's like, grass out of bed early in the morning, go get it done. But don't take away from your kids. Don't take away from your family. Don't take away from your career. Don't take away from the stuff that really matters. Because at the end of the day, unless you're Brian Shaw or Sadrina Savickas or one of these top-level guys making a living from Strongman, it's just a goddamn hobby. And I think you need to put it in its place. And I think too many people get so caught up in what they're doing, you know, and I'm willing to die for this. I'm totally cool. It's like you're willing to die for – you should be willing to die for something in your life. But – for Strongman to win a national championship, I mean, the amount of, I just laugh anymore, the amount of, when I hear these guys talk, it's like, Yeah, and I will not name this person personally, but he turned pro back in the mid-2000s, and he won a show, and he made the comments like, this is fucking stupid, because I spent $10,000 on my drug cycle to win $5,000. I'm like, yeah, it is kind of stupid, because I didn't spend shit.
Right.
You know? And I just think it's one that, I just think it's one that people need to look at what's their priority. And if this becomes your priority, and I'm not saying not to, you're young, do this. I mean, get this out of your blood before you have a kid and have a business and have shit that really matters. But you know what? Don't ever put this in front of the stuff that really matters.
And that had
me over watching generation after generation of strong men or strong women come up, that they put the sport in front of what really matters, which is the real important stuff in life, like, you know, God, family, job. You know, this is just some stupid shit that you do.
You know, that's why I have a lot of respect for somebody like Eddie Hall. Eddie Hall, you know, he finished his strong. He won the World's Strongest Man. And then he's like, I'm not competing. He goes, because, you know, I have a family and I have a wife and I have certain things that I want to take care of.
A lot of people don't realize. And people think that Eddie Hall is such an asshole. And, you know, and again, I've had the opportunity to be around Eddie on numerous occasions at Ultimate Strongman Masters World Championships. And in 2014, my bags were lost. I mean, I lost my bags. I had nothing, man. I was literally I wore the same shorts, same T-shirt, and same shoes and socks for like 5 days. But then God came out of the woodwork and just handed me stuff. And I remember Eddie walked over. He was one of the first guys to come over. He brings over and throws on my carry-on, he throws 2 T-shirts. Now, granted, they were a little bigger than what I could fit, but they were still in their wrappers. And this is a guy who, he doesn't know me from Adam. But I think that's what draws me to the sport of good guys. And it's like people, they watch his shtick of how he's just, I don't know. Some people say he's mouthy and arrogant and cocky and whatever. It's like, you know, that's all his shtick. That's all his persona for a strongman. So this is a guy who didn't know me, grabbed 2 shirts, came over and said, man, I'm sorry about your bags, and tossed them in 2 shirts.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is like a quality human being. And you know, when he said that when I win the World's Strongest Man, I'm going to retire. And he actually did it. And everyone wants to blow him shit about it. It's like, this is what he said he was going to do. I mean, I don't know. I commend the guy for being a man of his word. He told his wife he's going to quit. He told his kids he's going to quit. And he did. He won World's Strongest Man. And you know what? There's nothing you can say about it.
Yep. And that's why I have so much respect for the guy for doing that. I have respect for him for, you know, like, keeping his word. And I have respect for him that his family's a priority, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that shows good people. I think that I found out that the majority of the people in strength sports are pretty decent people. Like, I always felt like when I was competing in bodybuilding that it was like kind of and again, it's nothing against bodybuilding at all. It's a different type of sport. But when I was in it, it just always seemed like it was more like, you know, very, very you-driven, very me-driven type of thing. Whereas I feel like, you know, training in strongman, training in powerlifting, that type of a thing, there's a collegial feel. And it's like, you know, you're going to beat somebody's squat or you're going to beat their total, but yet they're still pulling for you just as hard as anybody else. You know, because I want to see that. It's a good feeling.
I think that's the thing I love about strongman is because, like, you get out on the field and it's like, you know, it's like flipping the switch. You're going to flip the switch. It's like the switch is already flipped because I want to win. I want to win that day because I want to beat you at your best. And I can think of the numerous times that I've competed against people and with people. And, you know, and people are like, oh, man, if you just did this, you'd have won. It's like, well, I didn't do that and I didn't win. But you know what? It was the fight. I remember, I mean, my most vivid, probably the 2 biggest losses of my career were 2003 at the North American Strongman Championships. You know, I had to win the Conan's Wheel. It was either if I won the Conan's Wheel, I won the show. If John Anderson won the Conan's Wheel, he won the show. You know, and he beat me. And I couldn't have been happier. I mean, I was the first person on the platform. And, like, actually, I think I tackled him and knocked him down. And, you know, it was just, I was so happy for him. And then, like, you know, at 2001 or 2013 Masters Worlds in Belfast, it was Mike Saunders from Canada. And, you know, Mike and I battled back all day. Battle back and forth all day, and it's like the stones. He beat me by 1/100 of a second in the power stairs. You know, if he won the power stairs, he won the show. If I won the power stairs, I won the show. He beat me by 2/10 of a second.
Damn.
But the first person I was on the platform, man, I'm like, I grabbed him, I hugged him. It's like, I still remember the video. It's like, you know, when they were interviewing, what did you think? It's like, you know, I lost to this guy. He deserves it. He's a champ. I couldn't be happier for him. It's like, I'm going to go home and start busting my ass for next year, you know? But, you know, I think that's the beauty of the sport. Like, I want to win on his best day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to give me. I don't want an easy one. I want to win on the best day. I want to compete against you in your best when I'm at my best. And then if it was enough, it was enough. It wasn't, it wasn't. And you know what? I can live with it. You know, I don't have to like it. I mean, I sure as hell didn't like it.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to take away from his experience of winning Masters Worlds. And you know what? You know, it was what it was. I got to make it back the next year. Got a couple more injuries. I've been three more times since then. You know, I've had the opportunity of going a lot, and I feel very blessed. I've had a very long, long ride in the sport.
Do you have one memory that just stands out? Like, do you have a favorite memory of competing in Strongman or something that just stands out as, like, I don't know, an epiphany or whatever?
I don't know. If I had one, probably the best one is the first America Strongest Man out in Vegas. And I went against Phil McDeasy in this godforsaken, you know, Magnus for Magnuson thought this shit up, sick bastard that he is. Carry this 330-pound tire like 25 meters, and you have to drag back 660 pounds with a tire 20 meters. And I finished – Phil and my training partner, Doug R., finished the event. I got third in the event. But then, like, they had to do the last couple of heats while I was laying on the ground. I couldn't get up. And there's Phil. He's 6'4", 420 pounds, comes over, picks me up. I fall down. Picks me up. I fall down. Picks me up. I fall down. I'm like, Phil, please don't pick me up again. I can't stand. And then I remember rolling off of the tarmac at the race in Vegas. It was hilarious. So I think of that one. There's so many memories there, you know, so many memories, so many friends. I don't know. It's just – I've just been really blessed and had a very glorious ride in this crazy sport of strongman. So I'm hoping I've got one more, you know, if I can get healthy enough, if the back gets healthy enough, I can do one more season. If not, it's not the end of the world.
Well, Chad, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. Like, I really, really appreciate your insights into, like, just your training philosophy and just talking to us, man. I mean, 30-40 years of training, I mean, the knowledge that you have is just incredible. So I can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on. I really enjoy it. Unfortunately, I have to pop because I've got a client coming in a second.
I got you, man. That's why I was just cutting it loose. But Chad, I'd love to have you on again and talk to training principles or whatever else you want to talk about sometime.
You let me know when and I'll make it happen.
Chad, thanks so much, and we appreciate it. For Chad Coy, I'm Chuck Zarowski, and thanks for listening to Strength Depositions. We'll see you next time. I've been training with weights for 30 plus years. It used to be you would just pick up a bar and you would go, and then that would be it. You'd be in pain the rest of the day, next couple days, and then you'd tear yourself up again. The biggest change in my training has been going to Tri-Cover Massage and Fitness. They specialize in dealing with the recovery of athletes and with injuries, or a combination of both. They have people that work with massage therapy, myofascial release, fitness, flexibility, you name it, they got it. They've enhanced the longevity of my training. When I started going, I could barely squat after doing it for so many years because of my hips. Now my hips are loosened up. They've given me different type of modalities to actually work and try and make my body better. And I don't think I've ever moved better than I have. And I owe that all to going to Tri-Covery. If you're a strongman, if you're into Ironman, if you're into CrossFit, running, it doesn't matter. These guys help you get the most out of your training. And I swear you will end up like you will feel a lot better after you get done. Tri-Covery is located in Novi, Birmingham, and Brighton. To get in contact with them, visit tri-covery, that's tri-covery.com, to learn more or schedule an appointment.
They have 8 highly trained performance recovery therapists. Please, they fix bodies. They do a great job. The people there are awesome. Jeff Kong is the owner, and you couldn't ask for a better guy. I want to give a special thank and call out to Becky. Becky, you've helped put me together, and I can't thank you enough. Give them a call at 248-773-8242. That's 248-773-8242.